stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
It's Friday night. It's the 25th of July. We're almost to the end of the month now. This is the Hour of Truth. We're on the State Sovereignty Hour with Dave. Brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Radio. Sponsored by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I am Dave, and for months now, I have wanted to find myself a co-host. You know, some nights I get so tired of just sitting here for two. Not that I mind talking to you folks. I love it. I love what I do on Friday and Saturday nights, but you know, when you just talk and talk and talk and talk for 2 hours, even though the things you say are important, sometimes it gets old, sometimes your throat gets dry, and sometimes you wish you had someone in the room with you just to bat things around with and just to talk for about 50% of the time. And I wished I could find someone who was as chatty as I was, who was as politically savvy as I was, who could match me in brain power, who could sit across the table from me and share this time with me. And finally, here he is, Mike Slack. How you doing, Mike? Mike, are you there? Well, Mike's here. We'll figure out what's gone wrong. I can't hear him. I don't know if you can hear him or not. I see him. But anyway, we'll carry on. Tonight we're going to talk about a couple of the... one second, let me see if I can...
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Okay, now you're here. Okay, there's Mike. A little microphone.
Modern technology. It's throwing me for a loop.
Yeah, a little modern technology going on there. Could you hear me while I was going on?
I could hear the wonderful things you said about me, and I hope we can live up to it.
Well, no doubt about it. So tonight we're going to talk about, for the first segment about Amendment 1. That is the Right to Farm Amendment. And then we're going to talk about Amendment 9. That is the 3/4 cent sales tax going to MODOC. I think there is, in my mind, probably, I hearken back, Mike, to the discussion, sometimes heated, always passionate, that went on between very conservative, very even libertarian people about two election cycles ago when we were discussing the constitutional amendment on whether or not it wasn't a constitutional amendment, it was a proposition about whether or not the city of St. Louis should have control of their own police force. That caused a rift in otherwise... I don't want to say otherwise because I guess coming down on one side or the other of that didn't really mean you were more or less patriotic or more or less, you know, there were just really two valid sides to that point.
Mm-hmm. You know, another... thing that this reminds me of with Amendment 1, the so-called right to farm, is the Convention of States issue, which has good people, constitutional slash conservative slash libertarian people, that I have worked with on many issues, divided among themselves on it.
Yes, yeah.
And I know that they're both well-intentioned, and I have actually just been encouraging more civil discourse among some of those folks, because I know great people on both sides of that issue. I know good people on both sides of this issue, but I have strong opinions on it, so the discussions do get passionate and heated at times.
Now, we all know from being involved in those discussions with you that you are passionately opposed to this thing. Run down the major points. You and I talked about this at length the other night when you were a guest on the show, talking about preppers and patriots, and this came up for an extended discussion. But go ahead for tonight's listeners and run down your major opposition to Amendment 1, the Right to Farm Act.
Well, I'd give a little background there first. It was almost 2 years ago that this constitutional amendment was being proposed in the legislature in both houses and voted on. And I belong to the Property Rights Coalition, a pretty good group that works for constitutional rights, property rights, worked pretty hard at fighting the blue way last year, and does a lot of other good things. My good friend Doreen Hannes, who is a part of that group, Bob Parker, and Mike Evans, talk show host in West Plains, and I got involved in discussing this with then state representative, now Congressman Jason Smith's office. He was one of the co-sponsors. The primary sponsor is Representative Reibold. And we were looking at it, and at the time, the proposed amendment contained the words, use of modern technology, that would not be infringed. I make no bones about having many fears about genetically modified, genetically engineered foods. Everything I have read about them indicates possible dangers and a lot of falsehoods being circulated about them, that they increase crop yield. They don't, from everything I can see. And the most common GMO out there is Roundup Ready corn. 97% of the corn that we eat is GMO, most of it Roundup Ready. And sorry if we have a little noise in the background. My dog should quit in a moment. And I was frankly concerned because it looked to me like it was going to give wide open birth to Monsanto, Cargill, other manufacturers of GMOs. And if a GMO corn crop is planted within 10 miles of my organic corn, wind pollination will contaminate my corn. Monsanto has sued farmers when their crops were contaminated by their GMO corn, their Roundup Ready corn, and bankrupted small farmers because they didn't have the pockets. They couldn't afford to fight these lawsuits from multi-billion dollar Monsanto. They were driving them into bankruptcy. I thought it was very immoral and very unethical. I didn't want to do anything or see anything done that was going to help Monsanto. But Representative Smith's office was saying that this amendment was to stop out-of-state animal rights activist groups from trying to declare livestock as pets. They were specifically saying that it would protect us from the Humane Society of the U.S., HSUS. My question to them was, why don't you pass a law directed towards these groups, stating that livestock are livestock, livestock are not pets? Amending the Constitution should never be taken lightly, whether it's the Missouri or the U.S. Constitution, because we always have judges interpret the laws differently under new amendments. There can be unintended bad consequences of some of these things. Now, they told me that a law directed at HSUS would not pass, so they had to do a constitutional amendment. Well, I didn't believe that, and all due respect to the congressman and his people. I still don't believe that. And if that law would not pass, then that means that the new amendment was inherently dishonest. they were trying to pull the wool over the eyes of someone, whether it was the people of Missouri or the rest of the legislature, or both. And, you know, that was a problem they said existed. I did not necessarily believe the problem existed, but they said it did. And if it did, then that's why they passed laws. Solve the problem that way.
Okay.
Now,
so let me just stop you there for a second and ask you a couple of questions about how far we've come to this point in the discussion. HSUS now, in my opinion, isn't just concerned with pets. I mean, what kind of law would we write? I'm just wondering what kind of law would we write to back HSUS and SPCA and PETA and these groups out of tinkering with farming?
Well, I asked them, Congressman Smith's people, why they didn't propose a bill, a law, that would simply state that livestock, and then name them, cattle, hogs, goats, sheep, etc.,
right,
chickens, rabbits, name livestock as livestock and state specifically they were not pets, and as livestock they were the property of the farmer or the
owner
of the livestock.
But I don't believe there's any question now that that dogs are the property of their owner, that dogs are animals. I don't think there's any question that horses that are on a farm being neglected, being starved, being deprived of water, and dying are farm animals, and yet you see these groups coming in and regulating and messing with these operations. How would that law stop them?
Well, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just making my best guess here. But I know that we already have laws on the books against animal cruelty.
Yes.
And I can go for those laws. I'm an animal lover myself. But I also have a small farm. The livestock are treated differently than the dogs and cats are.
Right.
But I think we already have enough existing laws to cover that problem. Did not see the need.
Okay. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to go ahead. Keep talking.
Oh, that's okay. Well, you know, there was a conference call that we had at one time. Doreen, Bob, Mike, and me. With the head of a group called Missouri Farmers Care, and also with Chief of Staff for now Congressman Smith. And at the end, and Congressman Smith is wanting to become a congressman. Joanne Emerson had just resigned.
Right.
And he was in the running to be congressman. And I think he was wanting to get this bill he was pushing passed. We were proposing, since he said this was to help farmers, be good for farmers, we were proposing that he replace this with a bill that simply said the rights of farmers to engage in direct commerce with consumers would not be infringed.
Ah.
Creating a food freedom law.
Right.
And eventually that bill was introduced into the last session of the legislature by Mike Moon.
Uh-huh.
Passed through committee, but it was never taken to a vote on the House floor. And that was due to, what's the man's name that's going to be Speaker of the House next time? Was it Lyle? Representative Lyle? Anyway, we'll have to have a discussion with him when it's reintroduced next time. But, you know, if he really wanted to help farmers, as he said this bill was designed to do, we thought that would help farmers. Farmers want to be able to, those I know, to be able to sell their eggs, their raw milk, cheese products made by, through their milk, directly to people in town without worrying about the farm police, you know, the milk board or the Department of Agriculture coming down on them like they did with Morningland Dairy a couple of years ago. And if anyone's not familiar with that, Google Morningland Dairy or go to YouTube. Nah, but a family was bankrupted and a 35-year-old business destroyed due to actions of the milk board. You know, I just did not see a need, though, for this constitutional amendment. And, you know, I'll just be real blunt. You know, I thought I smelled something fishy going on. And I asked other folks who were involved in these same negotiations and expressing opinions, and a lot of the rest of us felt the same way. And this group, Missouri Farmers Care, is a composite umbrella group composed of the soybean growers of Missouri, the Cattlemen's Association, the corn growers, the Farm Bureau, many other very, very large groups. And these very large groups have members who are small farmers. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about the members of, for instance, the Farm Bureau. I know a lot of them. A lot of them are great people. But the Farm Bureau itself has not always been a friend to small farmers. It was created to be a lobbying arm of the USDA, and they were backing the National Animal Identification Act and other legislation in the past that was not going to be good for small farmers. I did not want to stick an RFID chip in the ear of every chicken I owned, which is what that would have resulted in its original incarnation. And when all those groups were for it, and they were all saying the same thing about HSUS, it made me very suspicious. The more I talked to them, the more suspicious I became. But anyway, after discussing it with them, they did agree to remove those three words, use of modern technology. And when that was taken out, to me, the bill was not as bad as it had been. In the opinion of some people, it had become a simply worthless bill that didn't mean anything and had no need to be around. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, it's been almost 2 years now that I've been fighting against it. I remember when it passed in the Senate, after passing first in the House, and one Republican senator told me that it was obvious it was going to pass, so he was going to go ahead and vote for it because it would look as though he were trying to help the liberal Democrats in St. Louis if he did not vote for it. And apologies. I appreciated his honesty. And as much as it pained me to do so, because I never agree with them, even a broken clock is right twice a day, and I called the senior Democratic senator and asked him if he would consider filibustering the bill and told him he would have the full support of all of us who were opposed, even though we were constitutional conservatives who didn't agree with him on anything else. We wanted a filibuster. He backed down. He gave in to pressure from Republican senators. You know, so I believe we were betrayed by both political parties on this bill.
Well,
and,
yeah.
You know, I noticed, Dave, a man who knows more about this than I do probably is in our waiting room right now, Jerry Gettle, the owner of Baker Creek Seeds.
He is.
Jerry, come on.
We're going to do that. Listen, callers, join in, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Jerry's here. Jerry, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then let's get going.
Hey, it's good to be on the air with you. Yeah, I'm Jerry Gettle, and I started Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company in my bedroom basically about 17 years ago as a hobby, and I've been collecting and saving and passing on old and rare seeds ever since. So that's basically what I do, and I'm really concerned, you know, with the tone and this amendment sounds so good on the surface, and I know you probably went over a lot of this already, but, you know, you read the ballot language, it sounds like, you know, it's for Missouri citizens, it says Missouri citizens, and then you look at the actual amendment itself, and, you know, Missouri citizens is strangely, you know, disappears. And then you also look at, you know, who's sponsoring and who's funding this bill. It's definitely the people that are going to be benefiting from it. It's not, you know, we talk to small farmers every day here. Every day we're getting small farmers that come out to the seed company, you know, and gardeners and homesteaders. And we're finding a lot of the people, at least in our crowd, even the people that don't know which way to go, that are kind of thinking both ways, are deeply concerned with, you know, the possibilities. People don't feel confident. You know, the other side, the yes on one side definitely is trying to portray it that all farmers are confident. There's dozens of farmers we've talked to in the last few days that are wavering back and forth. They know that they don't want any more lawsuits and paperwork and any more control by corporate, you know, companies and so forth of agriculture, nor do they want any more control from, you know, big government. And the whole thing is very confusing, you know, to the average farmer.
Okay. What, you know, I keep hearing on the radio advertisements that say small farmers are for this. Is that Mike or Jerry, either one? Is that A, a lie? Is that B, a bunch of small farmers who are having the wool pulled over their eyes? Or is that C, there's really two sides to this story?
If I could go first, I think it's a combination of A and B. Those who are aware of what is going on, small farmers, are not for it, so it's a lie in that sense. And then I know a lot of small farmers who trust the Farm Bureau. They walk into the Farm Bureau and see the sign that says yes on Amendment 1. And, you know, because they trust them, they think everything must be fine. And then Farm Bureau, and I've stopped being polite about it, Farm Bureau has been lying about this thing for 2 years. Their lobbyists from Jeff City, who are holding meetings around the state, are just flat lying. And if there's no one there to call them on it, the folks in the audience listen to them. They assume they must be telling the truth. After all, they're the Farm Bureau. They're supposed to trust them. And, you know, that's my take. So a bit of A, a bit of B.
Jerry?
Definitely the same. And a lot of people, are questioning it. That's the thing that I found. A lot of farmers are wavering back and forth. And, you know, just a little bit of information you give them and actually show them the, you know, actually let them read the amendment itself versus what's on the ballot. Because almost everybody we talk to thinks that the amendment, the people that haven't really paid any attention, think the amendment says Missouri citizens. They think it would have to. And then when they see that, they start thinking. And then also they see who's supporting it. And also, you know, if you look at the farmers in the neighborhood that are supporting it very strongly, they tend to be farmers that have always supported anything that comes down through either the corporations above them or the government. So they trust whatever. If somebody says this technology is safe, it has to be safe. They don't even question it. But all the farmers that kind of have, that want to get more back to the land and want to do stuff more on their own and want to be independent, are the ones that are definitely, and in our neighborhood here, there's so many of the smaller, you know, farmers, you know, 50, 100 acres, 25 acres, 10, 5 acres that are questioning it. The vast majority of people that are stopping by are either questioning it or, you know, are a definite no's. And then there's a few that are yeses, but they're still, you can tell there's hesitancy in their in their tone.
Okay.
Jerry, who is for it that you know of that would be a surprise to people?
Well, most everybody I know that's for it is people that are either, you know, growing, genetically engineered corn, or they're like the president, or, they sell Farm Bureau insurance. The people in my neighborhood that are, you know, openly, you know, very for it have, you know, something at stake that they want to make sure, you know, whether it's their insurance office or so forth, something they want to make sure keeps getting, in the limelight and making sure that their organization looks good. But that's everybody that I know that isn't for it are, you know, pretty much independent farmers.
Let me jump in here for a second and say that, you know, I know a lot. I know a lot of farmers, small farmers, that are for this. I know a lot of small farmers who are against it. Now, to be fair, the small farmers that I know who are in favor of this are, they are terrified. They like planting Roundup Ready corn. That doesn't make them not a small farmer. That doesn't make them answering to a corporation above them. That doesn't make them, you know, not a person trying to make a living off of his 150 acres. They like seeds that are pest resistant. They like seeds that are designed to yield bigger crops. They like seeds that are inexpensive. And I don't know that it's quite fair of us to typify everyone who would be in favor of this as either ignorant of the issues. These guys out here that I talk to at the farmers market, they're terrified of us three, you know, that run around wearing our tinfoil hats saying that GMOs ought to be banned.
Mm-hmm. But I couldn't agree with you there, Dave, on one thing. If they are not afraid of GMOs, if they like Roundup Ready, products, and do they eat them themselves? I would assume they do.
Sure.
Then it simply means that they have not studied GMOs. They have not studied Roundup Ready, and they have been listening to a lot of lies. And I may offend some folks there. That's my opinion, not Dave's. But, hey.
And I agree. You know, there's definitely both sides. I mean, there's farmers out there that really believe in it. But even the farmers that are planting the genetically engineered crops, there's, you know, some that believe in them 100%, but many of them might not question the technology so much as the companies that are selling them to them. When they have to sign a, you know, 20-page release just to plant their seeds every year, and they have to, you know, the corn prices have went up, like, you know, from about $50 to $60 a bushel, you know, back in the 90s, to now corn with modern technology, some of it's over, you know, $300, up to almost $350 a bushel. A lot of the farmers are complaining under their breath, and if you talk to them away from anybody else, I know a lot of the neighbors here, they'll admit the system, even if they like the technology, they know something's wrong with the system they're signed into.
Well, I have to say, you know, I have to say that's true. I have to say that of the farmers that I've talked to, who I may have overstated their case when I said they enjoy planting GMO crops. I do know several farmers who have just succumbed to it in the last couple of years, who tried hard to be GMO free. But are finding it just too expensive, just finding it, you know, you're bringing a product to market that costs you twice as much to produce, and you don't have a market that is generally willing to pay twice as much to buy it.
Well, of course, one misconception there is higher yields off the GMOs. Jerry, am I correct?
You know, the cost is something that's, you know, debated a lot. Several studies have came out and showed, you know, and again, it depends on the area and the pest and what they're, and how they're, you know, how they're growing it. But several studies have came out, like the University of Illinois came out with a study and showed the cost almost on par between the, you know, the conventional hybrid corn and the, you know, the cost of GMO corn, simply because they were paying twice as much. In part, they were paying twice as much for the seed. And then also, since they were using a lot of Roundup, the cost in, you know, weed prevention also went up, although, on the other hand, the labor, you know, was a lot more expensive for the farmers doing it traditionally. The labor of, not so much hand labor, but the labor of, you know, actually cultivating the fields. But, you know, and so it varies on where you're at and which study you look at, but a lot of the studies out there, you know, have them on par. Some are one way and some are the other.
Then the question becomes, for me, the consumer at this end, why does it cost me significantly more to go and buy a non-GMO product than to go to the supermarket or even the farmer's market and buy a GMO corn?
Here's the big thing, subsidies. Almost all the big farmers are getting some sort of subsidy to grow. Even insurance, crop insurance is cheaper for GMO crops. Subsidies from subsidies. The bigger the farm, the more subsidies you get. If you're raising 5 acres for a farmer's market, you're probably getting zero subsidies, and you're probably doing everything, you know, totally by hand versus the big farmers that have everything, you know, computerized. So in a lot of cases, it's just the scale of it all. You know, if you produce 1,000 of something, it gets a lot cheaper than producing 10 of something. Kind of like, you know, if you make copies at a copy shop, if you go into a print house and tell them you want 100,000 of those copies, there might be a quarter penny a piece. But if you go get a dozen of them printed, they're you know, they might be 25 cents a piece. So it's all the scale is a lot of the issue. And there has been instances where that's actually coming down, thankfully, on the, you know, for non-GMO. And a lot of the bigger chains and so forth have been sourcing non-GMO, just starting to. So the prices will be coming down on non-GMO, but it's just the GMO side took over so quickly that the supply chain for the non-GMO kind of dried up into little tiny trickles, and the price, you know, the price went up as well.
Jerry,
because we don't have labeling, people don't realize they're buying GMOs. So when they buy the cheaper product, it's GMO, and they just don't realize it.
walk down the street, Mike, and let's take a poll. And of the first 20 people you talk to, 18 won't even know what GMO means when you ask them about it. So,
mm-hmm, true.
It's definitely a lot of people need educated, but it is amazing how many people have learned more than you would think. You know, just in the last year, we go out and about to a lot of different, like, the state fairs and, you know, garden events, which, you know, some of the crowd is more educated than others. But then other times we will set up at an event where it's just the general audience, outside crowd walking through at an event. And people are actually, you know, three or four years ago, people hardly knew anything, but you'd be surprised how much more in the last 2 to 3, 4 years people at least are, they might not know exactly what it is, but they know it's something bad, or they know bits and pieces about it. They know it's somehow connected with certain companies or a company, but they don't know the full, like, picture of it all. But a lot of people, when you know, they know it's something bad, but they don't know what is the biggest problem, and they don't know why.
Jerry, is there a large corporate-sized agricultural entity that is going non-GMO today?
Well, it's the larger size ones, they are producing, you know, some of them are producing more GMO, non-GMO seeds, but a lot of them are also producing the GMO side as well, you know, unfortunately. A lot of them are producing both.
I'm not necessarily talking about seed producers. I'm talking about somebody that grows my corn. Is there a large ConAgra size, or smaller even, a large corporate-sized farming establishment, farming corporation that is dedicating themselves to doing non-GMO?
Nobody large like that, but ConAgra is setting up a whole, just recently announced they're setting up a whole new side of their business for the non-GMO market. So that's one thing that they're pushing for, is basically they're going to start supplying both markets. And the demand for non-GMO has, you know, if you look at, I can't remember the statistics, but the market now is over, you know, I can't remember if it was $1 or 2 or 3 billion. It's over $1 billion, though. The demand for products marked non-GMO, I think it's several $1 billion in the U.S., but, I mean, which is tiny compared to our overall market. But if you look at the trend, there's several charts online showing how much, their demand there was, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago. And if you look at the trend, I mean, it has went up dozens of times, you know, since people really started offering non-GMO products.
Right.
And things like the Preppers and Patriots Expo, the Go Green Festival, the Pioneer Days that you guys do at Baker Creek, other events like this are raising awareness of GMOs with people, and that's one of the reasons for doing them. You know, one thing I noticed Pepsi is switching back to real sugar instead of high fructose corn syrup.
With their entire line?
I don't know if it's a whole line or if they're just bringing out a sugar version,
right,
to reach those folks who are trying to avoid the high fructose corn syrup. And some folks avoid it because they know it's not good for you. Whoever thought sugar would be almost a health food, but compared to high fructose corn syrup, it is.
Exactly.
And others because they know the fructose corn syrup is GMO.
It's made out of corn. We're going to kind of switch gears here maybe three-fourths of the way after the break, and we're going to get into a question that I've asked of both fours and againsts, and have not gotten there may not be a sufficient answer, but I haven't got an answer to my satisfaction, especially from anyone who's talking about being for this. Now, if you want to call, it's 347-677-1835. We don't eat people alive here. We don't bash people on the head. If you are for this thing, I, for one, want to hear from you. I want to. I don't want to debate you. I don't want to argue with you. I don't want to put you down. I want to hear your thoughts on why this is a good thing, especially if you're a farmer. We're going to come back right after the break, and we're going to talk about non-GMO labeling and things like GMO banning.
They told me that you had gone totally insane and that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method at all.
That can save your life. The Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16th and 17th at the Doubletree Hotel in Springfield, Missouri. Learn about long-term storage food, water filtration, solar power, firearms for survival, wilderness survival, and ways to protect you and your family during an emergency. Vendor tables still available. The phone number to call, 417-264-2435. 417-264-2435. Preppers and Patriots.
We're back. We're going to talk a little bit more with the head honcho of Preppers and Patriots here toward the second half of the show. We're going to find out some details about it. He happens to be sitting right here across the table from me. My co-host, Mike Slack. Jerry from Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds is with us tonight. And we're talking in the first half of the show about Amendment 1, the Right to Farm Act. If you want to get involved in that, it's 347-677-1835. All opinions are welcome, except anyone's opinion who believes that because they have that opinion, everyone else is a piece of crap. We don't want to hear your opinion. But if you believe that we need to have some honest dialogue about this thing, if you believe we need to talk about it, it doesn't matter what side you're on. Give us a call, and let's bat it around the table a little while. Okay, both guys, my co-host Mike and our guest Jerry, I asked today, there was quite a lively discussion going on today, and I got involved by asking the question, and this is a make or break. This is a deal breaker for me. This the answer to this question, and I have to sort it out in my own mind, but I want to bounce it off of other smart people. Say we pass Amendment 1. Say that Amendment 1 becomes a part of the Missouri State Constitution. And let's say 3 years or 5 years from now, the people of the state of Missouri decide to either ban or label GMOs, and I'm out with the March Against Monsanto people when we go for the march. So I am all about this. Will it, at that point, in your mind, be unconstitutional to ban GMOs if this is in the Constitution? Mike first.
Well, I would add to that actually one of our state reps does plan on introducing a GMO labeling bill in the legislature next session. And I don't know if he's patterning it after the Vermont bill or not, but the Vermont bill takes effect when four other states pass similar bills. The idea being Hunt's, Del Monte, all the other companies. If five states, a total of five states, or 10% of the states, pass such a labeling bill, then they would simply label the entire country. It would be cheaper for them to have one label to go everywhere. they want to, don't want to do one for Missouri, one for Kansas, one for Vermont. So, you know, this is within the realm of possibility in the next year with a little bit of luck. I definitely think that banning GMOs would be considered unconstitutional under this law. On labeling, I just don't know. But I do fear it, I have to say. Jerry?
Yeah, that's exactly what I feel and fear, and also the people we talk to. Who we talk to, and we've talked to, you know, different people and attorneys and so forth, and I guess the biggest thing that, the biggest possibility is it's going to probably go to the courts to decide either way whether it's legal or not legal. That's the whole problem with this. It leaves too many questions unanswered on so many different issues. Is this agriculture? Is this not agriculture? And also, what size of a farm do you have to be a farm? All these kind of things are going to be, somebody's going to say they're a farm with a quarter acre, and are the court's going to say that's a farm, or are they going to say you're a gardener? And so all these kind of questions are going to be basically answered in the courts, I guess.
Caller, can you hear me?
Oh, is the conversation still going on, or am I in the wrong room?
I was trying to check with the caller, and I'm still into the system, so...
Oh, that's all right. We've got Justin from Los Angeles. He has something he wants to say about the right to farm.
Is that Los Angeles in the Ozarks?
It's Los Angeles in sunny California. Not quite as God's country as the Ozarks, but kind of close. Justin, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What you got to say tonight, Justin?
Hi, how are you? I would just like to say that, you know, when we talk about rights to farm, you know, generally GMOs are, we find that they're good for farmers because they're affordable compared to competition, which would be non-GMOs.
So that's good for the farmer. How do you counter the idea that eating corn that's been saturated in Roundup might not be good for the people eating it?
Well, I think there are a number of studies out there that show the effects that GMOs have on those who eat them, and you also have a number of countries that have banned GMOs and continue to have a thriving farming industry.
Okay, so now wait a second. You're in favor of banning GMOs, or you're in favor of keeping GMOs?
Now, I'm not. I'm a favor of public opinion. So that the people of this nation or whatever state you're from, and the farmers can come to a joint agreement and say, this is what we're going to do, and we understand that, you know, they can come to a joint resolution so that everyone generally feels included.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing here in Missouri, Justin. On August the 5th, we actually have that question on the ballot for the people of Missouri to decide, is the state of Missouri going to protect farmers from those people who, I mean, protect farmers forever from those people who want to ban GMOs? Or are the people who want to ban GMOs going to be able to say to the farmer, well, we don't want GMOs growing upwind from us? So basically, here in Missouri, that's what we're doing. We're throwing it out to the people.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when banning GMOs, you're going to have to look at, you know, right now, you know, due to the amount of GMOs on the market, non-GMO products or seeds are going to be extremely expensive because it's kind of a, you know, like a rarity, really. It's like a electric vehicle, will you? It's going to be more expensive than a standard gas vehicle, which would be a GMO, so we would have to, you know, have a study that shows that can accurately predict the results of how that would affect farmers, you know, because here in California, we're having drought problems.
You're sitting here.
You know, Justin, you mentioned things being a bit cheaper. I bought some cornflakes a while back from the Dollar General store. I don't know if you have those where you are. Okay.
We have Dollar Trees and 9-inch stores.
Okay. Well, the Dollar General stores, DG stores, the cornflakes, most of the other cereals come from Mexico when you look on the label. So I bought cornflakes because I figured Mexico has banned GMO corn. I'm probably getting a safer non-GMO cornflake by going to Dollar General, and I'm paying half of what Kellogg's or Post Toasties would be. So, you know, sometimes the non-GMO is cheaper.
And I think that, you know, sometimes in a capitalistic society, in a capitalistic country such as America, sometimes you're just going to pay for that label. You know, if you look at the components that Apple Computers uses, they're not anything special. They're not cutting edge, but they put it into a package that makes people go, this is worth me spending my money on. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it's up to the individual to really choose whether they want non-GMO or GMO products. And, you know, if the public as a whole, as a majority says, look, we're done with GMOs, just ban it.
Now, let me ask you a question, Justin, because I'm a few years out of touch with the politics of California. Would you be in favor of making heroin legal?
I think that at the end of the day, with heroin and with any drug, it's up to personal responsibility. So when the rights and the safety of other individuals are at risk, whether it be drinking water, whether you drink too much water and that hurts you, or you go and piss on someone, when you violate anyone else's safety or rights, then, you know, I think that
so
anything...
you're basically a libertarian.
Sort of, sir.
Yeah. You feel kind of lonely out there in California on that side of the fence?
you go in the right direction and you'll find some people.
Yeah, but you know, I would agree with you. So let me see if before we have to let you go, let me see if I can pinpoint where you're at. Everyone should be allowed to raise GMOs or non-GMOs if they want to, but you probably would be in favor of some kind of labeling so that consumers can in fact make that choice.
Yes, there definitely needs to be some type of labeling. You know, I think they have an organic sticker that is like an FDA date. I think they currently have an FDA organic sticker. I think I may have seen that before in the stores.
Right.
So there should be a GMO sticker that says, okay, it says FDA GMO or FDA non-GMO. And, yeah. But
thanks.
Generally...
Yeah.
But generally,
thanks,
farmers should be able to grow whatever they want.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
good
Justin.
Night.
Jerry,
okay.
A question for you, getting away a little bit from the GMOs, but back to Amendment 1. You pointed out earlier that the language of the actual amendment is different from the language that voters will see on the ballot.
Oh, absolutely.
It says citizens on the ballot, but it says farmers and ranchers. Now, I don't know why that is the case, and it seems deceptive to me. I believe the ballot language should be identical to the bill's language. Do you have any idea how they get away with that and why?
Well, I think, you know, the reason why is pretty obvious. I mean, if you put Missouri citizens on there, what do you tell all the, you know, Chinese farmers that are wanting to buy in? If we try to restrict, you know, I don't think it's their goal to try to restrict, you know, Missouri farming to just Missourians. And I know there's a clause in the Constitution where they can only own 1% of the land or something like that. But the problem is, you know, with these factory farms, it doesn't take more than 1% of the land to produce all the pork and all the beef and all the everything else we eat in the entire state. They just buy the corn from everywhere else and raise the animals in these factory farms. So, I mean, that isn't hindering them any.
Mm-hmm. And they keep coming back, the folks that are in favor of Amendment 1, particularly Farm Bureau, keep coming back to the HSUS and the animal rights groups that they consider radical. But I don't see anything at all in the amendment that would protect us from these groups? Do you? Do you see anything
I don't see it either. I see it basically the protecting factory, the big factory farms. I think that was the goal of who they want to protect is their biggest donors. They're not really trying to protect, and I'm saying this overall. I'm not saying this about an individual politician, but when you look at politicians in general, when they're getting a big check from a seed company in St. Louis every year, every time they run for election or every quarter or whatever, and you can look it all up online who they're getting checks from, it's interesting. If you look at the U.S. as a nation and look at who votes for bills that are favorable toward biotechnology and who doesn't, it's you can just draw a line down, and anybody that's getting funding out of St. Louis from a certain seed company is almost 100% going to vote one way, and those that are not, it's a mixed bag. It's more half and half. But when you get funding from a certain company, you really have to, in order to keep getting the funding, you have to keep voting a certain way. And I mean, that's the same with here in the state of Missouri. Many of our politicians, you can look them up and see who they're getting funding from, and many of them are getting funding from the big Chinese operator that owns land in Missouri.
Smithfield, yeah. Or the
correct.
Company that bought Smithfield. And I'd point out here that Representative Reibold, who seems like a nice guy, and talking to him, when I talked to him about this, though, he didn't know me from Adam, but he started asking me all kinds of questions about how I felt about global warming, Al Gore. And I suddenly realized he thought I was a left-wing wacko. Most folks that know me would say I'm not. And I had to kind of give him my conservative constitutionalist bona fides, and he found it odd that someone who felt the way I did politically was not a fan of GMOs. But Representative Reibold, the primary sponsor, did take pretty large campaign contributions from Monsanto. And now Congressman Smith, we had a discussion about that at an activity in my county. He did not, when he was in the House of Representatives, take money directly from Monsanto that I'm aware of. I couldn't find any evidence of it. But when he ran for Congress, he did take a $5,000 donation from Senator Blunt's Political Action Committee. Senator Blunt's PAC took a $50,000 donation from Monsanto. So I considered that to be an indirect donation. And this year, by the way, he's running for re-election to Congress and has taken, last I heard, $8,000 from Monsanto for his campaign.
Yeah, there's no doubt about the fact that big business, Monsanto and Walmart, are buying politicians. I don't have any doubt about that. All right, folks, it's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We're winding down the first hour. We're going to wrap up Amendment 1 for tonight. We will revisit this probably on Friday of next week. I don't want to let this die, but I do want to get on to other things. We are looking at several other very important ballot questions, maybe even begrudgingly as important as this one. So in the second hour, we're going to move into Amendment 9, the 3/4 cent sales tax, an issue that probably does a little bit more than Amendment 1 about bringing conservatives together, but sometimes for the wrong reason. Hey, Jerry, thanks very much. You want to stick around for the sales tax talk, or you want to come back next week and deal with this one again?
I would love to. I have to run tonight, but I definitely I think normally I'm a no voter, so I think I'm going to look a little more into the rest of the measures. But generally I'm probably a 99% no voter anyway. Every time they try to change something, I get kind of nervous. So
yeah.
Anyway. Really appreciate it. Would love to be back whenever you'd like to have me back, and really appreciate you letting people know what's happening here in the state of Missouri with our food, and also getting the word out about Amendment 1, because we need to get people just need to look at it for themselves. I mean, the more they look, the more less most people are going to like it. So
We don't pay you, Jerry, so the least we can do is let you get in a plug for yourself before you go.
Well, I sure appreciate that, but, you know, the biggest, I guess the only plug that I really want to give right now, it's such an urgent issue, is, you know, people can just go out and look up, you know, more information on the measure, look up some newspaper articles. It isn't just the big town newspaper articles. West Plains put a great article out. There's been great articles in the Springfield newspaper. A lot of the other small town newspapers have had articles. Go out and look up articles, and what I would ask people to do if they do one thing is write an article to your newspaper, let your neighbors know, get the word out, ask your newspapers to cover the issue.
Thanks, Jerry. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
All righty. Well, you know, I really, Mike was kind of inviting him to get in a plug for Baker Creek there, but...
Let me give a plug for him.
Do it.
You know, we are blessed in the Ozarks to have several really good heirloom seed companies, but Jerry's was the first, and it's the largest. And it's really grown. He has facilities in Connecticut and California, as well as Mansfield, Missouri. His seeds are great. His staff has always been willing to come out and talk to classes my wife put together. Ozark Self-Reliant Living University, they came out to go green. I'm talking to his marketing people about coming to the Preppers and Patriots Expo, hoping they'll be there. And they do this Baker Village every spring. That is, it reminds me of Silver Dollar City 40 years ago when it was a lot smaller. And, you know, it's on Sundays and I believe on Mondays. They're pretty devout Seventh-day Adventists, and they're closed on Saturday. But, you know, I'd recommend anybody go out there to that. And it's a good company to get seeds from. And they have a wonderful, beautiful catalog.
Okay.
You can wallpaper your house with pages from the catalog.
Amendment 9 after the break.
Come the archer. Come the infantry. Come the archer of hell. This is why we fight, why
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Back to the state sovereignty issue of Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's Dave and Mike. I paged back there while the break was on, Mike, to review my own notes because Amendment 9 didn't sound right to me when I said it. It's Amendment 7 that is, in fact, the 3/4 cent sales tax. And as I was reviewing my notes to find out that I was wrong there. I noted something that you failed to bring to my attention, and that is that when I posted our bumper today to try to draw people into the show, I referred to you as Mark instead of as Mike in one instance.
Only one, and you're forgiven. So
I apologize.
That's fine. No problem. I just noticed on my own Facebook several of my friends shared the links for the show tonight, so I'm hoping they're listening.
Yeah, we're looking forward to a large crowd tonight, and if you're out there, give us a call, 347-677-1835. Now, we sat around for quite a while in the last period, and we listened to Mike and Jerry talk about why you should vote no. I told you at the start that I am I'm on the fence on this thing. I want to tell you that a deal breaker for me is going to be how I decide that constitutional question will be issued. But I want to say something to you folks out there, and I want to say it loud and clear from where Dave comes from. This isn't necessarily where Mike comes from. This is where Dave comes from, and I want to preface that this with a caveat, and that is that when I come here and talk to you on Friday and Saturday night, even though I'm an outspoken member of the Executive Committee of Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and even though Missouri Grassroots Coalition sponsors Missouri Grassroots Radio, which thankfully hosts us on Friday and Saturday nights, when I say something, I do not speak for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I speak for Dave. All right. I have a dear friend. I want to start with a short story. A dear, dear friend who hates, absolutely hates, the guts of a fellow from St. Louis named Rex Sinkfield. She despises the way she believes he buys politicians. She despise, and so deep is this disgust for this fellow that if he came out tomorrow and put $1 million in a campaign to pass the fair tax, she'd be against it. I don't want to see us go that route. I hear too much of, I'm against it because this person's for it. I'm against it because this person's against it. This, if this person's for it, it can't be good. As my co-host here so correctly points out, a broken clock is right twice a day. I'm not saying that you shouldn't look into where the money's coming from, and what, but at the same time that Monsanto does spend a lot of money to promote this thing, you have to give some credibility, if you're going to go that direction, to the folks who say that this is an anti-HSUS bill, because HSUS is spending a bunch of money to beat it. So all I'm saying to you is listen to the arguments, listen to the discussions, put your own brain to work, but please don't ever vote on something because someone else is for or against it. That's lazy voting.
Someone, Dave, say to me the other day that they were looking at HSUS, and they said, well, if they're against it, I have to be for it. And I told them that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard a smart person say. I agree with you. And I'd like to say here, too, I actually, I tend to name names, and I gave a bit of a hard time to Congressman Jason Smith and his staff. And, you know, I'll say I'm totally on the other side on this issue of Amendment 1. But on the other hand, I've worked with him and his staff and been very thankful to them for their help on several other issues. like helping to defeat the Blue Way, and their help with the Ozark Scenic Riverways problems recently. And right now he is doing quite a bit to help us out with the DNR and the EPA and some water problems we're having. You know, so Ronald Reagan once said that the man that agrees with me 80% of the time is my ally, not my enemy.
Exactly.
So we can have some disagreements on these issues here and still get along.
Oh, yeah, and I agree. I want to say that some of my staunchest friends in this movement that we're involved in, and I have come to serious disagreements on several issues. The St. Louis police issue, for one. Last year's SAPA override, for another. And I like to say that our friendship and our alliance is unfazed by the fact that once in a while we have a philosophical disagreement about some things, and I think that speaks volumes for our joint integrity. Okay, Mike, let's just ask you: are you for or against paying MoDOT 0.75 cents for every dollar that you buy or spend, so that they can fix the roads and bridges?
I'm voting no on that one. I don't want to reward bad behavior. I don't think they handle the money they have right now appropriately.
But the roads and bridges broke, Mike.
They don't handle the money they have now appropriately. And, you know, I'd like to see them clean their house up, start to handle the... is it MoDOT, the group... just a few years ago in Springfield was spending a ton of money on one of the more expensive but very good radio stations to do an hour-long show three times a week.
Yes.
Telling us how great MoDOT was. So they were spending our own tax dollars on airtime to tell us how great they were. That's not why we pay our taxes.
Well, and in fact, here's where I come from on this. I want to see this thing beat. I want to see it scrapped. I want to see MoDOT begging for money to do what they are constitutionally commissioned to do. And then I want to find a legislator, and I'm going on a drive to do this as soon as the next legislature is selected. I have a couple of targets in mind. But I want to find a legislator, and if I can't in the next year or two, I'm going to try my hardest to get an initiative drive together to amend the Missouri Constitution. I know we talk too damn much, Mike, about amending the Constitution. We seem in this state to want to amend the Constitution on a whim sometimes, and it bothers me somewhat. But in my mind, our Constitution needs to be amended badly, specifically as it applies to MoDOT. There should be no executive bureau that has unfettered access to taxpayer money, and we're talking about MoDOT, who has totally uncontrolled access to tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm. They do.
And you're right. They obviously don't know what to do with it, because now it's time for them to do their job, and here they are. They've spent their allowance on something else, and they can't do what they're supposed to do.
Well, they bought the candy bar, and they wanted the comic book, too, so they want Mommy and Daddy to increase the allowance.
Right.
Isn't MoDOT the department that we see on the side of the road with one person working and three people supervising?
That's indirectly MoDOT. Of course, they contract that labor out, but I guess you could say that they pay a little too much for it if they can pay someone to shovel and three people to supervise.
I spoke with the presiding commissioner in my county a couple of weeks ago. He was at our PRC group. And he let it be known that basically MoDOT has been trying to bribe the county commissions into supporting this, showing them their plan for improvements in each county. Now, they really screwed up in my county because the one thing that we really need is widening of Highway 63, and they don't have that on the plan. They have a few measures that are fairly worthless.
Yeah, greenways, greenways, trailways, bike routes. Yeah, there's a couple of those on the plan.
Mm-hmm. So they've kind of messed up there. It's my understanding that our county commission is not supporting this, or at least the presiding commissioner is not. I can't speak for the others. So, you know, but again, why should we reward bad behavior?
Yep. I'm in total agreement, and it goes beyond, I want folks to understand that I am against this sales tax going to this entity with or without legislative oversight of this three-fourths of a cent. And that's the selling point on this, Mike. The selling point is that the legislature is writing into this amendment, and again, we're amending the Constitution to add a temporary three-quarter cent sales tax to be specifically given to MoDOT, with the caveat that money would be controlled, that the specific work orders, down to work order level, would be controlled and appropriated by the legislature rather than going directly to MoDOT the way constitutional MoDOT money does. That is, your listeners out there do realize, don't you, that MoDOT isn't part of the legislative branch of government, that branch of government that represents you. MoDOT is part of the executive branch of government, that branch of government that is supposed to execute the laws of the legislature. You understand that according to the Missouri Constitution, MoDOT gets directly, that is, bypassing the legislature, bypassing your representative, bypassing the appropriations process, they directly get paid into their pockets all of the fuel tax, all of the road tax, a hefty portion of the sales tax on automobiles. That all goes directly to MoDOT. It's not appropriated. It's not controlled by the legislature. None of the way that money is spent is controlled by anyone who works for you.
So the legislature, the House, does not control their funding the way they do with other agencies.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct. They get all of this money directly, and that's that right there is why I'm voting no. I am generally in favor of the fair tax. I am generally in favor of using a consumption tax to completely replace all the other taxing systems we have. I am generally in favor of funding everything with a sales tax, but I want MoDOT fixed. Before we give them any more money, I want MoDOT. I want this appropriation process that is keeping MoDOT able to make these crazy contracts that you're talking about with three guys watching one guy work, and to buy this multi-million-dollar sign project on the highway that says MoDOT cares and buckle your seatbelts, And not to say that it's not a great thing that we've got a cable running down I-44 to keep people on their own side, but good grief, after you fix the roads and bridges, you do that.
You know, several years ago in Springfield, I wanted to put a sign up for my business, and I was in an area that was zoned certain types of business, including mine, but not straight commercial.
Right.
But it was surrounded by straight commercial behind me on both sides and across the street. Well, it was on Sunshine near Campbell. It was one little shopping center.
Uh-huh.
That was zoned differently. And the city said I could not have my sign Well, I put my sign up, but I put it in the very large plexiglass window, so it was still visible, but no longer outside and violating their laws. I wound up in municipal court over a ticket for my sign. kind of a sore spot with me at the time. Municipal courts, I think, are courts of revenue for the city rather than courts of justice. And but at the time, the city of Springfield, and I knew what I'd paid for that sign, something like $500 to have it made. The city of Springfield had signs all over the place on their construction saying progress as promised. And each of those signs would have cost $500 on the private market to have made. And they were posting them in school zones and residential areas, violating their sign ordinance.
Right.
That I'd had to fight them over. You know, to me that was pure hypocrisy. But they did not have adult supervision on that. What you're describing with MoDOT is them functioning without adult supervision because the House cannot cut off their funding or reduce their funding.
Correct. Can't even.
With the Department of Revenue recently, the House threatened to cut off their funding to get them to come clean on the scandal where they were sending concealed carry information to Morpho Trust in Atlanta and then to Homeland Security in violation of state law.
Right.
You know, the House being able to cut off their funding was the way we got them to partially fix it, at least. But we can't do that. They don't have adult supervision.
That's right. No.
I think you're right. We need to change this crazy law.
And I say before they get another dime, and it may turn out that that in the end they need another dime. It may turn out that once we look at the books, once we decide how much is going to fix, cost to fix I-70 and I-44 and I-69 and everything else that needs fixed and to make these bridges what they should be, because they've neglected them with all the money they've wasted. It may turn out that for a temporary amount of time they need another dime, but we need to get that. I mean, it's not that they can't cut off their funding. They can't even appropriate their funding. The legislature can't even say that you're going to spend this X million number of dollars to fix this highway, and you're going to spend that X number of dollars to fix that highway the way they do with everything else, the way the legislature legitimately appropriates money for specific projects to be completed. I mean, it's insane.
How many temporary taxes that are passed are really temporary?
Well, there you go, too, yeah.
We usually wind up retaining them.
Yep, we sure do.
Hey,
so
I'll tell you what, for straightening out MoDOT, we'll find a state rep to introduce it.
In
fact, let me challenge Jeff Pogue, my representative, if you're listening, Jeff. We got a job for you.
I wonder why, I used to wonder why no one has jumped on this before. And when I look at, let me open the book here. It happens to be lying right on my desk. When I look at section, Article 5, section 29, I understand why. I mean, this is going to be an immense undertaking. This Constitution, this is an entire section. Highways and transportation is an entire section of the Missouri Constitution. It's not a seven word sentence or seven sentence paragraph even like the right to bear arms or anything like that. We're talking about having to change an entire section of the Constitution, having to restructure an entire bureaucracy. So this is no small undertaking, but in my mind, it's got to be done. I mean, it absolutely has to be done.
You know, I really have a hard time understanding why the Constitution has a section on highways.
Yeah.
The U.S. Constitution doesn't cover highways. That seems to me that the type of thing that they would simply pass legislation to cover, and that it would not normally be in the Constitution, but state constitutions tend to be taken more frivolously than the U.S. Constitution. They add all kinds of weird things to them, as we're seeing in this next election.
Yep. So, how are you? How do you feel, Mike, about sales taxes in general, as opposed to say income or property tax?
I'm a fair tax supporter. Also, since I first heard Neil Bortz discuss it years ago on the radio, and Herman Cain was a strong proponent of it until he ran for president, switched to that 999 plan, but, you know, privately he told someone that was just a good start, that he was still a fair tax supporter.
Yeah.
You know, if we had to have an income tax, I'm for a flat tax.
Right.
But I think we'd be a lot better off. And I read the book, The Fair Tax, that came out about it. That was the name of the book, The Fair Tax. It makes sense. I'd be all for it. The progressive sales tax, it punishes people for success. You know, the liberals say that...
You meant to say the progressive income tax.
$200,000 a year pays a higher percentage of the person who makes $100,000
right. Yeah.
Or the person who makes $50,000. The liberals say that person can more afford it. Well, true, but they're still punishing him for success with that higher percentage that they're keeping. And I heard President Obama this morning talking about capital gains taxes, and the percentage paid on that, isn't it, what, 15%, 18%?
Eighteen percent.
Right. And comparing that to, let's say, Warren Buffett's secretary and the percentage of income tax she pays. And again, he's trying to take two wrongs to somehow get a right, you know, because they're taxing two different types of income, and they're taxing
Correct.
Them at a different rate.
Correct.
I would rather simply see income not taxed at all. And I'll be a little bit radical here, too. If we're going to retain this income tax, quit taxing corporations, because they're not paying the tax anyway. They're raising the cost of whatever they sell to us, and we're paying it.
Absolutely.
Now, taxing corporations is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Well,
that's why American corporations go overseas. And if we either had the fair tax or simply did away with the corporate income tax, we would have foreign corporations coming to this country to build their factories. And we'd be creating more and more jobs. Now, the fair tax outlines that pretty specifically in the book.
Right. That's exactly right. And it follows logically for anyone who sits down and thinks about it. You know, I absolutely don't understand how a person who considers themselves a free marketer can't favor the fair tax over the income tax. I absolutely don't see how anyone who considers themselves a smaller government person can't favor the fair tax over the income tax. I mean, the income tax is, in and of itself, inherently evil in that it is the only reason, the only justification the government has of knowing how much you make and how much you have. And once the government gets its fingers justifiably on those numbers, then the government can pit classes against themselves.
And class warfare seems to me to be inherently un-American.
Oh, yeah.
The progressive income tax was written about by Karl Marx, who said that was the first step towards communism.
Right.
You know, and some folks will hear me say that and think, oh, you know, conspiracy nut or John Bircher. But, hey, you know, read Das Kapital.
Yeah.
Which I did back in college.
Yeah,
and,
it's right.
You know, and Woodrow Wilson was the president at the time, one of our first progressive liberals, who managed to get the constitutional amendment passed that made it legal to tax income.
Uh-huh.
He's also the the president who came up with the Espionage Act during World War One and was locking up American citizens of German descent. You know, he's a favorite president of the liberals, but he was acting like a fascist during World War One. And, you know, he had a stroke and wound up unable to function. His wife pretty much ran the country the last few months he was in office. You know, but he was not a good president by any means, if anyone actually takes the time to study him. And we can thank him for the current income tax. And then Franklin Roosevelt for increasing it more and more and more, and then Lyndon Johnson even more in the 60s. You know, so thanks, liberals.
And listen, slap me silly if I don't say at least once every time we talk about this that the people who ought to be jumping on the fair tax bandwagon are you progressives / liberals. I mean, it is a tax that is built more than anything you can envision in your wildest socialist dreams to make sure that a single mother living on minimum wage pays zero tax, while the millionaire pays mega tax.
Because when the billionaire buys a Rolls Royce and a yacht, he pays sales tax on it.
Cha-ching.
But the single mother would have the prebate built into the fair tax. And
right.
Taxes would be voluntary because you only pay them when you spend money above and beyond what it costs to exist.
Yes, but here's the thorn in the progressive side. And shame on you for being so blatantly obvious about it, my progressive friends. Here is the thorn in their side. It's fair. The single mother gets the prebate and Bill Gates gets the prebate. And they just can't stand that.
Oh, no. No, they can't. You know, I've never met someone, though, who was against the fair tax who had actually read the book, The Fair Tax, that explained it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have. I've met some fairly smart people who were opposed to the fair tax. I've met some fairly smart people, some very
smart.
Have
they read the book?
Yeah, who've read the book, who oppose the fair tax, who believe that, in fact, one of my best friends, who is very smart, Harvard educated, contends that the only way to straighten out the government is to exempt everyone from any kind of tax who makes less than $100,000 a year, and then just beat the shit out of everybody who makes more than that.
Wouldn't that simply make people less willing to work hard and be innovative and entrepreneurial?
Well, not in his opinion. In his opinion, it would make those people who own the government anyway take a vested interest in making sure that the government spends less money. The problem is, we're already doing that. If you make $70,000 a year and have three kids, you already don't pay no dang tax.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And we're already beating the crap out of the guy that makes $100,000 a year.
They don't call themselves that anymore, but I really think there are more communists in Washington, D.C. now than there are in Russia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there absolutely are. We're going to take a break. We're gonna say that it's a concurrent no on Amendment 7, and we're going to come back for the last 20 minutes or so, and we're going to talk to our co-host Mike about the upcoming Preppers and Patriots Expo. Don't miss it, Saturday, August the 6th. Am I right, Mike?
Saturday and Sunday, August 16 and 17.
16 and 17. We'll be right back.
To cold climb, come springtime, so let me hear you say,
no matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
All right, we're back. I want to say they're intentionally, Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a penniless organization. Intentionally, we are not a 501c3. Intentionally, we don't make money. Intentionally, we don't answer to anyone in the government for what we make and how we spend it. Intentionally, we don't ask you for a dime. We don't push a political agenda. We would qualify as a 501c3. We are nothing more than an umbrella organization to facilitate communication between patriot groups. There are patriot groups in Missouri Grassroots Coalition that have differences on specific issues. That's okay. There are groups within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition that don't agree on everything. That's okay. There are people within groups at Missouri Grassroots Coalition that don't agree on everything. That's okay. We don't promote the agenda. We promote a facilitation of communication and support between patriot groups from all over the state. I say that as a preface to the fact that we are intentionally broke and off the grid as far as the federal government is concerned. There's one thing we ask you for money for every year. One thing. We don't charge you dues. We don't ask you for money when we got to print something. We don't ask you for money when we got to go somewhere. We don't ask you for money when we got to have a meeting. We don't ask you for money to support our radio show. We ask you for money for one thing every year, and that's the Secret Santa. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Santa button in the top menu. Click on PayPal and send us a couple of bucks now. Now, in the middle of the year, while it's easier than it's going to be in November and December, okay, we know it's hard for us to come beg you for money at Christmas time, and we know it's hard for you to give it up at Christmas time. So we try to spread this out all year. We come here 3, 4, 5 times a week begging you to send us a couple of bucks. Every dime goes straight to Secret Santa. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button. Send us a couple of bucks on PayPal. Mike and I will be back tomorrow night. Mike and I'll be back next Thursday and Friday, but or Friday and Saturday. But between now and then, have we got a deal for you? Cynthia Davis comes along on Tuesday nights with Homefront. Cynthia's a spitfire. She's as patriot as they come. She's a down-to-earth, straight-talking, conservative Republican. No, that's not right. She's a conservative constitutional partyist. It's the other one who's a conservative Republican. Cynthia is a conservative, member of the Constitution Party, straight talker, and always a hoot. Cynthia is entertaining to listen to. She's educational to listen to. She's on Tuesday nights. Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager, the ultra-conservative Republican, comes along with a show she calls Culture Vigilante. For conservative Republicans, conservatism is about the culture. For conservative constitutionalists, conservatism is about God and country. So you'll get a little bit different perspective, but it'll all come out to the same end. That's Cynthia Davis on Tuesday. That's Lisa Payne Nager on Wednesday. Don't ever miss it. And then, of course, Mike and I will be back Friday and Saturday with the voices of reason. Tell us about Preppers and Patriots, Mike.
Sure. Well, I'll mention too, Cynthia's car, last time I saw it, had a big sign that said ex-Republican on it.
Yeah, right.
And the Constitution Party, which she is a part of, was actually the very first vendor to reserve a table at the Preppers and Patriots Expo.
All right.
It's for Preppers and Patriots, and they will be there. I understand on the Patriot side we'll also have the Missouri Convention of States group, the Missouri Freedom Alliance, the John Birch Society will be there. And, you know, they've gotten a lot of bad press over the years from the progressive liberals in the 60s especially. When I heard their executive director speak, you know, he sounded like my next-door neighbor. He wasn't crazy. And so I encourage people to go up to their table and talk to him and see for themselves, you know. And they have an excellent magazine with a lot of good articles in it. I have some friends who write for it. Pardon me. And that is on the Patriot side. We'll also have, as far as speakers go, Ike Skelton with Missourians Against Agenda 21, Dorian Hannes with the Property Rights Coalition, and, oh, was there somebody that grabbed you there?
Oh, yeah, Anti-Agenda 21, something that even the most devout conservative could still learn a whole lot about, Agenda 21.
Oh, definitely,
So much going on there. So many tentacles and spider webs going on inside that thing. Yeah.
It is. You know, and we're also going to have Doc Bones and Nurse Amy. Now, that's the professional names they go by. And, you know, I hate to use Google as a verb the way some people do. But, you know, use your search engine and search out Doc Bones and Nurse Amy. You'll see that these folks, he's a doctor, an MD. She is a nurse practitioner and a certified midwife in her state. They teach survival medicine, and they are in many ways rock stars of the preparedness movement. They go to the major expos. They have been on many television programs. They're very, very well thought of because they took early retirement and started hitting the road teaching people about medical preparedness, how to handle problems when you don't have a doctor around. And they will be speaking twice, probably giving a class there, and they have a lot of medical products for sale, and they have instructions on how to use them. We have another doctor, Jim Caesar from Branson, is going to give a presentation on suturing when there is no doctor available. I mean, our motto is 2 days that can save your life at the expo. And either Doc Bones and Nurse Amy or Dr. Caesar actually could save your life in the future. Another of our speakers, Dawn McPherson, the same way. She'll teach folks how to make medicines from things they probably have in their kitchen now or can get at the grocery store, the health food store, or sometimes have growing in their yard, different herbs, plants, and things. I always use as an example when I had a mild infection and needed to get rid of it. I went to see Dawn, got a concoction she'd made. I know it had some cayenne pepper in it. Could taste it. Had raw honey, colloidal silver, and, garlic. Yeah, was the other ingredient. You know, an odd taste. But each of those things is a natural antibiotic, and it cleared it up. And, you know, if you can't just go to a pharmacy and get an antibiotic, if there are no doctors around, no pharmacies, no Walmart or Walgreens, that's a way to get a good antibiotic going. And a lot of people wonder where to get colloidal silver. C.C. Silver, Carl Ricard, who comes down to Go Green, will be there. And he both sells jars of colloidal silver, a water impregnated with silver, which people have known for centuries had antibiotic qualities. And he also has a machine if people want to use it to turn water into a colloidal silver mixture, and it uses real silver and an electrical process to impregnate the water with that silver. You know, I think that's something everybody ought to have. We have John Moore, the Liberty Man, speaking. He's going to talk on climate change and things that he thinks the government doesn't want you to know. Joyce Riley, who is a nurse. She was a flight nurse in the Air Force during the first Gulf War. I first heard her 20 years ago on a radio program talking about Gulf War syndrome and how Gulf War vets were getting sick. The Pentagon and the VA said they were well. There was nothing wrong with them. Well, turns out they were sick. You know, some of the chemicals that were used over there, some of the depleted uranium shells, et cetera, caused a variety of ailments. And she worked hard for years to try to get veterans the help they needed, and she still does that. She has a radio show called The Power Hour on every day, and I'll be on that show next week. By the way, I'll let you know when the time comes. Mike Evans, who has had a radio talk show down here in the West Plains for the last 3 years. Mike is a valiant warrior for liberty. He's helped us with a lot of projects. And he's going to be helping me out with the expo, too. I found out we'll be roomies in the hotel for the weekend. And but he is somebody that I can trust to help me make sure things run on time and on schedule. Dave Lohr, a friend of mine who has a business here called Kosh Trading Post, makes bows out of oak and ash and other woods the same way that Indians made them in the 1800s, 1700s. He also makes a device called an atlatl, a throwing stick for throwing small spears. And these things were used for 5 to 10,000 years before the bow and arrow were invented. And you can actually hunt deer in Missouri with an atlatl. They don't cost very much. They're handmade, good quality. And, you know, he can show you how to use them. I know at a lot of Native American events, they have atlatl competitions. They try to keep that part of their culture alive. We have several non-GMO heirloom seed companies that will be present. Down to Earth Seeds from Yellville, Arkansas will be there. Scott Peterson, their owner, will speak. White Harvest Seed Company from Hartville, Missouri, Mike Knox will speak. His talk is on GMOs and heirlooms, explaining the difference. I'll be talking to Baker Creek on Monday. I'm hoping that they'll be joining us. We'll have Bob Gaskin, who has Black Dog School of Survival. And Bob will speak twice, and he is an expert on almost anything related to preparedness for disasters, tactical operations. He can tell you what types of firearms you need to purchase, depending on where you live, what you want to do with them. Really, really smart guy. And I know in his product line, he carries a book called Making the Best of Basics, written by James Stevens, who calls himself Dr. Prepper. I was on his nationwide podcast earlier in the day. We had on, as guests on that show, Shane, the manager of a store called Just In Case.
Oh, yeah.
In Springfield. Okay. That's a store you can go to for anything related to preparedness, and they probably got it. In fact, I kind of half jokingly said, I think you've got everything except concrete storm shelters, Well, you know, lo and behold, you can
he
order
said,
the storm shelters.
Oh, yeah, we've got those, yeah.
Yes, look at our catalog.
Yeah.
And Daniel from Numana Foods in Texas is coming up. That is a long-term storage food company, freeze-dried foods, that are packed in Mylar and really over-engineered as an effort to keep oxygen out of them so that they will last years and years and years. And I tasted some 30-year-old freeze-dried food last year, and it was really good. It was beef stroganoff. I would have thought it was, you know, new, fresh, or maybe a year or two old, but it was 30 years old. And there are several good brands of freeze-dried food out there for long-term storage. We'll have folks representing Thrive Foods, one of those brands, Noah's Pantry, another good brand, and Noah's Pantry is actually an Ozarks, Missouri Ozarks company. A guy named Mark Price owns that company. They carry that at the Just in Case store. Numana coming up from Texas, of course, will have theirs, Mountain House, several other brands. I'll probably be surprised at some of the things we see there that I didn't know existed. The Swiss America Company, which is a broker and trader in precious metals, will be there and giving a talk on precious metals as a replacement for currency. If the worst happened and there was the economic collapse that some people think we will have someday, I'd always heard that having gold and silver around was a good idea. But I don't know as much about that subject as I'd like to. So I'm going to try to listen to the lecture that she gives and learn a little bit more about it. When you're in a survival situation, communication is important. We'll have a speaker on ham radio and CB radio and other types of emergency communication. And water purification and filtration is very important. And I know that we have folks there carrying all of the major brands, Aquapail, Berkey, and other types of water purification systems. Some of them will even get rid of heavy metals and trace radiation.
Whoa.
And so I'm anxious to look at those. Let me see. You know, I ran through, I don't have the list in front of me, I'm just using my memory, but to me, that's enough speakers right there to come out and pay the measly
$10. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I was figuring $10 in 2 days, that's like 70 cents an hour for information that could save
you
life.
Do you have any vendor booths still available if someone's interested?
We do have a few booths available still, or tables. So if anyone's interested, they can give me a call at 417-264-2435, or they can go to the website and email me, preppersandpatriots.net. And let me give a shout-out to Darren, who was one of my Facebook friends. He's listening to the show, obviously. He posted a Just Say No on Amendment 1 graphic on my timeline on Facebook a while ago and said, thanks for the ad. So you're welcome, Darren. The thing is, with the Preppers and Patriots Expo, we're trying to have everything we could possibly have that you would need to know to handle man-made disasters and natural disasters. And naturally, you're not going to learn it all on one weekend. But you get enough information to know where to go from there. What vendors that you meet in person that you trust, they'll all deal with you online, over the Internet, or by mail order and by telephone. I should mention Ozark Mountain Self-Reliance will be there. They had a store a lot like Just in Case in Mountain Home, Arkansas, and he switched over to a complete online system and reduced his prices a bit. And I've dealt with them in the past. They're an excellent company, too. And again, you know, I know some of the vendors that I really like compete with other vendors I really like. But we don't have anybody coming that does not have excellent products and doesn't have true integrity, really. So I feel like you're safe dealing with any of them. And I'm really proud to have them all. And I tell you, this expo is something my wife and I had talked about doing for months and months, and she passed away unexpectedly last summer. I finally decided that I had better get busy and follow through with our plans. And I really kind of feel like she's guiding me a bit on this. And
Why so, Springfield?
Why Springfield?
Yeah.
Well, they had not had an expo in Springfield for at least 2 or 3 years. There's a fellow who had done some really good expos in the past in Springfield, but he moved to Lebanon. So Springfield was kind of free. And I had several vendors actually tell me at the Go Green Festival, tell me that they would like to see one in Springfield itself again. And since I'd done 6 Go Green Festivals, they figured I probably knew how to put something like that together. And they said they would definitely take vendor tables and support it if I did it. So just checked around, and I saw that they were actually all over the nation. We have them in big ones in Nashville, Denver, Atlanta, Dallas. And I talked to some of the guys that put on the other expos. And most everybody that was in that business was really friendly to deal with. They said, you know, just let us know the date of yours. We'll let you know the dates of ours so that we don't step on each other's toes. And then we'll cross-promote. And I thought, okay. You know, this is kind of the friendliest group of supposed competitors I've ever seen. But most of the folks I talked to felt like they were on a mission to help educate the public and save lives.
Cool.
And, I like that.
So. I do, too. I do, too, and I'll see you there. I'll see all you folks there. Listen, I'm going to wrap up here. I'm going to wrap up here by saying this is an hour twice a week in state sovereignty. The Mike and Dave Show. We aptly titled the show State Sovereignty. And so some of you have been sitting there tonight saying, I'm used to listening to Dave rant and rave and rail about why we need to kick the federal government out of the state of Missouri. What the heck does any of this mumbo-jumbo, right-to-farm, three-quarter-cent sales tax, MoDOT, have to do with state sovereignty? I want to tell you something that you've heard me preach every night we've gotten together at this little forum for the last 3 years. You've heard me say this same thing over and over again, and we're going to wrap with it tonight. In a true constitutional republic, in the only true constitutional republic that mankind has ever known, in the United States of America, the way it was founded and the way it was designed, you cannot say this or that or this is not a function of government. This or that is not a rightful function of government. You cannot say that carte blanche. And once again, I'm preaching to the choir 99% of the time, but sometimes the choir needs to be reminded of the gospel, okay? You can say that about the federal government because the federal government is defined by the federal constitution. It is owned by the states, and it has a limited power. Listen to me and listen good. All other power is reserved to your state. And how do we at the state level, the state power that supersedes, that creates, from which emanate the federal powers and the federal limitations, how do we define the power of the state government? That's a lot of power, brothers and sisters. That's a lot of power. That is all other power. We define it with the state constitution. We, the people of the state of Missouri, define the function of government in our state constitution. The function of government is not a term that is just reached, that is brought to us from the Encyclopedia Britannica or from the philosophers of old. The function of government is defined by you. You own the state constitution. The states own the federal government. but you own the state of Missouri. You own all other power. You own the function of government. That's why everything we've talked about tonight is so important. We are defining, brothers and sisters, in these votes upcoming, the function of government. No matter how you vote, you have to get out there and vote. Vote thoughtfully. Vote listening to both sides. But you are voting for what will or will not be the power of the state of Missouri over people's lives. That state has got to have some power. It has got to have some authority to maintain a civil society. But you define what that power is, not the federal government. That's what state sovereignty is all about. All other power, except for those things enumerated in Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, belong to the state of Missouri and belong inevitably to you. Mike, thanks for coming. Man, I am thrilled. I'm thrilled to have you along. I'm looking forward to spending a lot more time with you.
I am too. I've enjoyed it tonight. I'm happy to be here. And I look forward to tomorrow night.
We'll talk tomorrow night, folks. This is Dave. That's Mike. Good night from Missouri Grassroots Coalition, from Missouri Grassroots Radio, from the State Sovereignty Hour, and from both of us.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaking, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken. Someday you will learn to be still.
Madison.
Oh, wait a second.
Or paid attention.
Are you there?